Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Good afternoon, everybody. Okay, today we continue with the study of the Sutta Nipata, and this time we come to the second chapter in the Sutta Nipata, and we take one short sutta in this chapter. It's called the Hiri Sutta. The word Hiri means a sense of shame, but this is only the title that's given to the sutta because of the first word in the text, but the sutta will cover several topics. But first, there's a certain background story to the sutta which comes in the commentary. And as I always say, as I say again and again, the background stories that come in the commentaries, sometimes one has to be a little bit skeptical about them, but it's interesting to know what these stories are. They might just be part of traditional legends rather than historical facts. Okay, according to this story, there was once a Brahmin family, a man and his wife, and they were quite wealthy, and they had one young son. And they showered upon this young son all of their affection. They brought him up under luxurious conditions. And when the son reached the age of his maturity, when he became a youngster, a young man, both of the parents passed away, and the son inherited all of their wealth. And so first the son was grieved that both of his parents died, but when he received this wealth, he thought, what could I do with this wealth that would be worthy of my parents' trust and confidence, worthy of the love that they showered upon me when I was growing up? And he thought that I should use this wealth for meritorious purposes. And so he began giving away this wealth to all the poor people who needed any kind of assistance. He would give anybody who came to him, giving generously, giving, giving, giving. He established offerings at his home, so more and more people heard about his generosity and they would come. Ascetics would come, Brahmins would come. Anybody who came would get gifts and offerings from him. Then he set up a kind of large-scale charitable offering lasting for weeks and weeks, in which he would announce through the kingdom, anybody who needed any wealth should come to my house and they will receive gifts. And so he gave and gave and gave until all of his wealth was exhausted. Then he felt a great sense of relief that instead of feeling impoverished, he felt a great sense of relief that he had exhausted all of his wealth in this meritorious practice of charity. And now he felt completely free of all bondage and attachments to any kind of worldly ties that wealth could have caused him. And so he thought, what should I do now? And what he did was to follow the ancient Indian practice of going forth into homelessness, becoming an ascetic. he followed what is called the practice of the Tapasa Pabuja, which means without any teacher, without joining any religious sect, one just cuts off one's hair, goes, gives up one's worldly garments, puts on kind of yellow robe, and one goes into the forest, into the mountains, builds oneself a hermitage, and one lives an ascetic life, practicing austerities, practicing kind of yogic meditations. And so this young man adopted this way of life, the life of an ascetic, a tapasa. He went into the foothills of the Himalayas, just north of the town, the city of Shravasti, and he was living there as an ascetic. And one day, while he was meditating outside of his hermitage, a citizen of Shravasti came into the foothills of the Himalayas looking for a particular type of precious wood called sandalwood in order to make fragrant incense. And so this young ascetic saw this man who he recognized from the city, and he saw him, held him, and they were speaking together. And he asked this man from Shravasti, "What is the news in Shravasti or Savati?" And the man told him, "The one that they call the Buddha has appeared in the world. He is the fully enlightened one, the fully realized one. And he has come to Savati, and he has established a monastery in Savati called Jeta's Grove. And he is living there and teaching many hundreds of people, thousands of people. And everyone regards him as the supreme teacher, the greatest teacher in all of India." And when this young ascetic heard the word Buddha, it was like somebody had poured a pot full of cool water over the head of a man who has been hot, sweating, weary, tired, exhausted. He felt so refreshed, so excited, so excited, so ecstatic. And he asked this man from the city, he said, "Did you say that a Buddha has appeared in the world?" Again, the man said, "Yes, the Buddha has appeared, and he's teaching in Savati." Still, the ascetic couldn't believe it and said, "Did you say the Buddha has appeared in the world?" And the man said, "Yes, the Buddha has appeared." And so now the ascetic was convinced and thought, "I must go and see the Buddha myself." And so he went down from his hermitage. He went down to the city of Savati to see the Buddha. And as he was coming to Savati, he thought to himself, "I shouldn't simply accept on trust that people say that this particular teacher is the Buddha, an enlightened one, but I should investigate for myself. And what I will do is formulate in my mind four questions. And I won't speak these questions out loud, but I'll just keep these questions in my mind. And if this person is really the Buddha, then he will be able to know these questions in my mind, and he'll be able to answer them." And so the ascetic came to the monastery in Savati. The Buddha was, at this time, he was teaching a large assembly of people. When the Buddha saw the ascetic, because the Buddha has high regard for those who are living a sincere ascetic life, whether or not they are following his own teaching. So he told the crowd of lay people, here is an ascetic coming, please make way for him. He asked the ascetic to sit up in front of the assembly. The ascetic sat down there, and then the Buddha stopped his regular sermon, and then he started to recite certain verses. And these verses were given as replies to the questions of the ascetic. Okay, the questions that the ascetic had in mind, these come actually in the commentary. They don't come in the sutta itself, in the Hiri Sutta, but the translator of the Sutta Nipata, Venerable Saddhatissa, has, for our benefit, he has given them in the translation. We're now on page 28 of the translation. So the four questions that were in the mind of this Brahmin ascetic from Shravasti were, with whom should one not associate? Or in other words, whom should one not take as a friend? The second question, with whom should one associate? In other words, what kind of person should one choose as a friend? Three, what is it that brings happiness? And then fourth, what is the sweetest condition? And then the verses themselves are the answers to those four questions. Okay, I will recite the verses now, then I give translation and explanation. Okay, I recite first in Pali. Hearing tarantang vichi kuchamanang sakahamasmi iti basamanang saihani kamani anadiantang ne so mamanti iti nang vijanya. Okay, this is the way I would translate. Okay, I modify the given translation a little bit. One who transgresses against the sense of shame and who despises any sense of shame, who while saying, I am your friend, does not undertake any work that he might do for you. One should know well that he is not my friend. And I'll actually take three verses together that are all dealing with the one who is not the true friend. The next verse says, Ananvayang piyang vachang yomi te supakubati akarong tang basamanang parijananti pandita. Okay, one who uses pleasant words to friends, but does not act accordingly, the wise know him to be a mere talker, but not a doer. and then the two lines, first two lines of the next verse, also concerned with the one who is not the friend. Naso mito. Naso mito yo sa da appamato. Beda sankirandam mevanupasi. Then the next two lines concerned with the friend. Yasmin chaseti ura sivaputo save mito yo parehi abejo. Okay, he is not a true friend who is always eagerly looking to create conflict, and who is only looking out for defects. He is indeed a friend who is incapable of being separated from you by others, like a son who is sleeping on his father's breast. Okay, now I'll go back and take these verses in turn. Okay, the first 2.5 verses are concerned with the qualities of one who is not a true friend. And the first verse mentions a very important criterion of the person who is not to be regarded as a true friend. In the very first line, the line that gives its title to the sutta, that is one who transgresses against the sense of this quality called hiri, which we translate as the quality of moral shame. And this doesn't mean, you see, in Western way of thinking, to have shame is considered something of a bad thing. One is not supposed to be ashamed. But in the Buddhist way of thinking, what is called hiri is considered an extremely vital quality. This is the foundation for the entire structure of morality and ethics. And it's not simply the quality of the kind of sense of shame that children have of being shy and not being willing to make friends or to go out into the open and do things with other people. But this is what is meant by hiri. I prefer to call it the sense of inner self-respect or the sense of inner honor. And it is a kind of deep voice of conscience, which seems to come up from some deep resource of the mind and speaks to us at times when we find ourselves in some ethical dilemma, some ethical conflict, where we are undecided what to do, especially when we are confronted with a conflict of interest. That is, a conflict between two alternative courses of action. One of them appeals to our desire for personal gratification, to our desire for, it will satisfy some desire of ours. It will in some way fulfill our self-interest. it will give us some pleasure, some satisfaction, but some satisfaction of what we can call the lower nature, some satisfaction that will involve a violation of a principle of ethical conduct. And the other prong of this dilemma is that inward voice which is telling us that it is our obligation to resist that pull of desire and to adhere to our standards of ethical conduct. Okay, in this situation, when we are caught in that dilemma, in that conflict between desire or self-interest and the felt need to adhere to higher standards of ethical conduct, then here is that voice of conscience that instructs us to follow that higher calling of right action, to give up that drive, that thirst for pleasure, for self-gratification, even though we will feel dissatisfied, and instead to follow that higher calling, that calling towards a higher level of ethical conduct, in the realization that by doing so, we will be moving upwards towards a higher spiritual goal. And so, here that voice of conscience, that sense of self-respect, is a kind of inward voice that helps us move from lower stages in the scale of spiritual development to higher stages by driving us from within. It's not through any kind of consideration of the outer consequences of our action, not from a consideration of how others are going to evaluate our action, not from the fear of the karmic consequences of our action. For that, there's another quality that goes with hiri. That quality is called otapa. Hiri in Chinese is Tan. Otapa, its brother or sister, is kwe. The accent, the tone is right? Kwe. Fourth tone, I think. So it's tan kwe. Yes, so otapa kwe. That is considering I shouldn't do this action because others might blame me. Others will look down on me. Or this action has bad consequences, karmic consequences. It will bring pain and suffering in the future. Bad rebirth. But hiri doesn't look at the consequences, but it considers from a kind of inward point of view. So I consider hiri to be almost like an inner voice of nobility, or even we could say it's an inner voice, the voice of a kind of inner divine nature, which is, you might even call it a kind of the voice of a Buddha nature, which is helping us to cast off all of the deluded ideas that we might have about what is in our self-interest and instead to pursue what is truly in our self-interest, even though that might take time to mature and involve at a certain stage in our development a renunciation of things that we take to be in our self-interest. Okay, now a person who does not, everybody has this sense of hiri built in. It's something almost intrinsic to human nature. But that voice of hiri, its volume differs in different people, just like the volume in a radio. And some people who are spiritually developed, the voice of hiri is very loud, like the volume is turned up. So a spiritually developed person never considers taking any kind of immoral or unwholesome course of action. But in undeveloped people, the voice of hiri, it's like the radio is on, but it's like you're driving on a freeway, expressway, and people are talking in the car, and there's a thunderstorm outside, and people are saying, can you hear Beethoven's Fifth Symphony? And what symphony? You know, if everybody stopped talking and you stopped the car and turned up the volume, you could hear the symphony, but can't hear it with everybody talking and the cars going by. Okay, so somebody who doesn't pay any attention to that voice of hiri, and who, when that voice is speaking to them, thinks that that's nonsense, don't pay any attention to it, that it's better to pursue the good here and now, something that was can touch, instead of these stupid ideas about pie in the sky when you die, about getting benefits in some afterlife, some blown up, deluded ideas about enlightenment, nirvana, Buddhahood, liberation, karma, rebirth, all of that is just fantasy notions. What's real, substantial, solid is getting enjoyments here and now. Money, fame, pleasure trips. Whatever you have to do to get that. Cheat, steal, swindle the others. Lie, deceive, doesn't matter. If you get into trouble, just find a way to wiggle your way out of it. Everybody's doing it. The movie stars are doing it. Sports stars are doing it. Politicians are doing it. Everybody's doing it. Why shouldn't I do it? Okay, so a person like this, you want to take a person like this as your friend? You think you can take a person like that and trust a person like that? Okay, so this kind of person, the Buddha says, he'll come to you and say, I am your friend. You help me. I need your help. And when you're in trouble, I'll help you. Anything you need from me, I'll do for you. But right now, I need your help. Please help me. Okay, now, this kind of person, will you take such a person to be your friend? Of course, if you want to help a person like that, if you see that This is a real charity case that you can help out of compassion. Then maybe you'll help a person like that. But do you want to become close to a person like that, to take a person like that as your friend? The Buddha says, this type of person one should know. This isn't my friend. And I think the translation, it's somewhat wrong. Just to point out, he says, who behaves shamelessly and who despises his friend. That's not the meaning. The meaning is the one who transgresses the sense of shame and who despises the sense of shame, not the one who despises the friend. Okay, then the next verse says, okay, the one who speaks who utters pleasant speech to his friends, but doesn't follow through on that speech. This person one should know to be a mere talker, but not a doer. Okay, this is another type of person that one has to be cautious of, careful about. Again, this will be a person who lacks that sense of shame. But this is the person, the distinctive feature of this person is a smoothness of manner, which manifests itself in, we can call this hypocrisy and scheming. These are two qualities that go together. Hypocrisy and scheming. Hypocrisy means displaying virtues that one doesn't have. And scheming means behind the other person's back, one is plotting, scheming against the person. I think it's Chan Chu, correct? Chan Chu. So the person comes up to you and says, this type of person, often very pleasant smile, very soft, smooth manner, not the rough person. Often when you see a person with rough manners, tough manners, we are put off by that type of person immediately. And we think this is a rough, tough, gross person. I don't want to become friends with that person. But there's another type of person with very smooth, pleasant manners, almost like flowing oil. And a very sweet voice, pleasant way of speaking. And when you meet the person, always very pleasant and cheerful way of speaking, almost musical voice, like, oh, how are you today? Oh, so happy to see you. What can I do for you today? And then praising many, Bhante, I love your talks. I enjoy them so much. I get so much benefit out of them. Look how many notes I've taken from them. Okay, that is smooth manner. then the other side is the cunning and scheming. Eyes turned around the corner. Okay. Plot. Okay, when? You go up to the second floor with the shotgun. And when he reaches that point on the street. Okay, so this is the type of person that one has to be very careful of and know that this person is what they call a speaker, not a doer, especially the person who's speaks pleasantly and makes offers of help. But when one really needs the help, the person is not around to help. Okay, then the other person of course these different types of people closely related, but these are different qualities of the person who is not to be regarded as the friend. This comes in the next verse, 255. He is not a friend who is always anxiously alert. He says, in a conflict. I don't think that's the sense. I take it to be who is always anxiously alert to create a conflict. Vedasankhi could be taken that way. And who is only looking out for defects, always watching for faults. So this is the kind of person who, we spoke a little about this morning in our discussion group. What is this called in Chinese? In Pali is called pisunavacha. This is divisive speech, liangshi, double tongue. Liangshi. The type of person who, when people are united, seem to be in harmony, instead of rejoicing in that harmony and trying to come together with the people who are on friendly relations, instead this is the person who is trying to sow discord, to create disharmony. So they're looking for any kind of sign of tension, any kind of disagreements amongst the people in this group. And when they find any kind of disharmony, disagreement, they'll seize upon that and start spreading rumors, exaggerating the disagreements, speaking about it to people outside the group, so that the way reports get distorted when they're transmitted from one person to the next, to the next, to the next, till they come around to the people in the group, they're completely blown out of proportion. And then when the people in the group hear this, then they start fighting and quarreling with each other. And then all hell breaks loose. And that is the dangerous potential in this, what is called tale-bearing, spreading false rumors. And so when one sees people who are like this, one has to be very careful. And often it's very difficult to detect people like this. But when one sees people who have these qualities, one has to keep a distance from them. Of course, if one can teach and transform them, so much the better. But be a little careful when dealing with them, because they might have not one's best interests at heart, but they might be trying to make trouble for oneself. The person that one should associate with is described very concisely here. This is the person who cannot be separated from oneself. The person who will be as close to one as a son sleeping very soundly against his father's breast. But there's another sutta where the Buddha speaks in much greater detail about the qualities of a true friend. And this is a sutta that I have so much affection for, because this sutta speaks in great detail about all of the different aspects of life in the world, about the relations of parents to children, children to parents, husbands to wives, wives to husbands, and also of friends to friends. It's called the Sigalaka Sutta, or the Sigalovada Sutta. It's sutta number 31 in the long discourses of the Buddha, the Digha Nikaya. And here the Buddha speaks about four types of true friends. What are these four types of true friends? First, one of them he calls the helpful friend. Okay, the helpful friend, this is the friend who looks after you when you are careless, when you are in a situation where you're not able to take care of yourself. This is the friend who comes to your rescue, takes care of you, who looks after your family when you can't take care of your family. He'll help your family members too, who will see that your possessions are secure, who will be a refuge to you when you are in some kind of danger. And if your business or livelihood is failing, he will help you to start a new business or to help you find a new livelihood. Okay, that is called the helpful friend. Okay, the second type of true friend, this is called the friend who is the same in fortune and misfortune. Okay, this is the type of friend, according to the Buddha's explanation, who will guard your secrets. If you tell this person your personal secrets, this person can be trusted with them. He will keep them and will not reveal them to others. And this person also will trust you. When he has problems to discuss, he will tell you his problems and discuss his secrets with you. He will go out on a limb to help you, even if it will cause him great risk and difficulty to his own security. And the Buddha says that this type of friend will even give up his life for your sake if that becomes necessary. So that is the friend who will always be your friend in fortune and in misfortune. Okay, the third type of true friend is called the friend who guides you towards the good. This is the friend who restrains one from wrongdoing. If this friend sees that you are about to go astray, to take a wrong path, he'll stop you and give you sound advice, sometimes even a stern warning, that you have to change and take the right course. This friend will encourage you in doing good and give you every type of support to do what is good. This is the friend who, if he learns something new about practices on the path, new Dhamma teachings, will share those teachings with you and encourage you to learn them as well. And when this friend becomes well established in some higher stages in the path, this friend will instruct you and guide you along those stages of the path. And then the fourth type of good friend or true friend is called the sympathetic friend. This is the friend who sympathizes with you in misfortune. That is, when you get into trouble, when you are going through a difficult period of trials, of suffering, this is the friend who will come to you, sympathize with you, not just having pity on you, but who will really come to you and share your misfortune and try to cheer you up or to help you in your misfortune. And when you are going through a period of good fortune, this is the friend who will rejoice in your good fortune. And then the Buddha says, when others speak against you, this is the friend who will come to your rescue and stop them and say, you shouldn't speak about my friend. What you are saying about my friend, if it's false, he will correct the false rumors. If what they are saying is true, he will say, maybe what you're saying is true, but it's not nice to speak and to criticize behind his back. But if you have criticisms to speak about him, then let's speak politely to him and tell him openly these criticisms of him, to speak them in a polite and cordial way to help him correct his wrong ways. And then when others praise you, then this is the friend who will commend them and join in the praise. So those are the qualities of the sympathetic friend. Okay, so when, of course, it's difficult to find a person who meets all of these qualities. This is almost like such a rare person that if in our lifetime we meet a single person like this, we could consider ourselves blessed. But we should try ourselves to become people who meet these standards of being at least one of these types of true friends to become true friends to our friends in this way. Let's not worry about finding other friends like this outside, but to our friends, we should try to become friends like this. Not trying to criticize our friends behind their backs, not trying to find faults, not trying to just promise to help them, but when they need help, tell them that we have other things to do and maybe next week we can help them. But try to help them when they really need our support and to fulfill the criteria of a true friend. Okay, I thank you for your attention, and may the blessings of the Triple Gem be with you all. The week after February 11th, then I will give, the lecture will be partly to complete this sutta, but then I think I could do that. It won't take that long to complete this sutta, but then I will also do a short sutta, which I didn't write on the blackboard. It's called Suchi Loma Sutta. It's number 5. It's number page 30, 31. Because I thought I would finish this sutta today. Okay, I've gone beyond my time, so I won't do the sharing of the merits. I just say, may the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. Thank you for your attention.